Part 2, Chapter 5, Godliness, Part 1. After our study of the first four steps of the Sevenfold Path, we now would like to illuminate several aspects of the fifth step before your consciousness. Supplement steadfastness with godliness. May we first recall the following to your memory. Make every effort to supplement your faith with virtue by the activity of the permanent atom. The light power of the gnosis enters our personality via the sternum, and virtue with knowledge, with the aid of the thymus hormone and the blood, the light power is projected into the head sanctuary with all attendant consequences. And knowledge with self-control. The candidate reacts to the suggestions of the inner light and intelligently takes leave of the workings of nature, which are also revealed in his system. And self-control with steadfastness. Proceeding in self-control, the candidate lives in such a manner that the flame of the light of Christ, which has been ignited in the heart sanctuary, with all the profound consequences thereof, can no longer be extinguished and will burn forever. Then he will ascend the fifth step, guided and impelled by this burning candelabrum, and steadfastness with godliness. Now, something changes in the personality of the candidate. Not only does his mode of life change, not only does he direct himself spontaneously on the path due to the inner light, but structurally, physically, and from the bottom up, the foundations for a totally different, absolutely new reality of being are laid. We are extremely grateful and happy that we are permitted to give you some information about this, as it is yet another proof of the fact that the day of all days is at hand. Once again, a holy Whitsuntide is approaching, and the seven schools must do their utmost so that the historic and prophetic words of Acts 2 are realized anew. Now there were dwelling in Jerusalem Jews, devout men from every nation under the heaven. In our days too, such a multitude of godly people must be gathered. It is the multitude to which we allude as the coming new man. As pupils of the spiritual school, you can already now, in the immediate future of today, tomorrow, and the day after tomorrow, enter this state of genesis of the new man, but only on the basis of the fifth step by I. See, as soon as the candelabrum of the universal light can no longer be removed by virtue of its flaming reality, this candelabrum awakens godliness in us. Free yourself of all the superficiality of the religious masses, which has been anchored in the blood of countless people by the terrible ignorance of their spiritual leaders. They say that godliness is piety. A godly, i.e., a pious life, therefore means faithfully living up to everything the church requires, thus giving proof of high moral and totally consequent actions. When that is all very well, but this attitude has nothing to do with the godliness of original Gnostic intent. Yet, throughout the ages, the knowledge of true godliness has never been withheld from mankind. The science of original godliness was imported to all peoples and races so thoroughly and absolutely that one cannot but be amazed at the total ignorance demonstrated by people of otherwise high standing. We think that the science of godliness ought to hold special appeal to the people of our modern century. We have heard and read of the discoveries by our physiologists, biologists, and physicians. We know of the might of the infinitesimally small in a system such as our body. We know what a hormone, a vitamin nucleus, the thousandth part of a milligram of medicine can do and achieve in our body. We know how to influence and change the processes of man's growth by means of the hormone of the thyroid gland and of the pituitary gland. We know what a close connection exists between these hormones and our physical reproductive power, our morality, and how much they influence our active life. And now just think for a moment. When a human being is assailed by a mighty ray of light, such as that of the gnosis, and this light strikes him like lightning, touching heart, head, and blood, did you think that this medicine of salvation, this supreme remedy, would achieve nothing more in our life, in our body, than bourgeois religiousness, an officially acknowledged piety. The power of the Holy Spirit makes one holy, makes one whole. It is a medicine, not just in the abstract, philosophical, mystical sense of the word, but also bodily, anatomically, and biologically, all at the same time. This is wonderful and magnificent, but likewise radical and dangerous.
If the work of the spiritual school were merely to engross itself in meditation on the immovable kingdom, which we do not possess, which we do not see, and with which our nature has no dialectical contact whatsoever, were we completely to lose ourselves in numerous philosophical considerations, saying, it's like this, while remaining natural humans, what difference would there be between the spiritual school and any other natural religious association? Were a pupil of the spiritual school desiring to go the path remain exactly the same as those outside the spiritual school, then we could rightly ask, why all this effort, all this talk? However, the person who contemplates the path seriously and decides really to go it, changes physically, biologically, and anatomically from that very moment on. You must see the absolute logic, the necessity of this. We are imprisoned here in this Adamic hut and have to bear the consequences. Well then, if the path of salvation, the process of universal healing, is real and true, it must begin here in the body. It must be founded here. A person who merely listens to the word, an observer only, remains a talker, a somebody who knows things very well but does not carry them out. There is no equilibrium between words and deeds. This is understandable as he is merely orienting himself on spiritual status while rooted in this nature. Whoever remains in this natural status is a hearer at very best. His actions and deeds are and remain of this nature, utterly eye-centered and consistent with the world. But whoever breaks through this natural status to the spiritual status changes immediately, and as already stated, not only morally, ethically, and religiously, but physically as well. This bodily change is godliness. It reveals itself on the fifth step of the sevenfold path.
For this reason, we address all those who have decided to ascend the sevenfold path, and particularly those brothers and sisters who are preparing themselves for the fifth step. In the near future, there will be proof of the coming new man. The day of the new Whitsuntide is approaching, when, on the fourth step, the flame of the new light has become an ever-burning candelabrum. A firepower issues from the very bones. It enters via the heart sanctuary and proceeds to the head. This firepower of the gnosis relates to a fourfold ether substance of a totally different nature to that known in dialectics. Thus the candidate is connected to the four holy foods. He is a being of this nature as well, however, a being of flesh and blood who lives in dialectical nature. He therefore also needs the four ordinary natural ethers. If the normal natural stream of ethers were suddenly cut off by the connection to the four holy foods, immediate death would result. Can you see that this person lives two lives, albeit temporarily, an ever-decreasing life and an ever-increasing, growing life? And as you know, there is a hydrogen constant in the serpent fire system, which is the seat of consciousness. It is the hydrogen constant of ordinary nature. Of course, it is impossible to transfer the hydrogen ether of the four holy foods to the ordinary serpent fire column, which is filled with the serpent fire of nature. This would cause fermentation, poisoning, explosion. Such a calamity always occurs when a human being tries to grasp the values and powers of the holy gnosis with his dialectical consciousness, with his dialectical eye, and thus with his dialectical serpent fire. For a short while, a few years at very best, there will be a bright, flaming light, a feverish activity which will abruptly, suddenly, and dramatically cease, just like the life of a comet. One cannot put new wine into old wine skins. For this reason, a second serpent fire is formed in the body of the candidate, who must also live according to nature for as long as is necessary. The possibility of doing this lies in the sympathicus. Ancient wisdom Harms, therefore, calls the nervous sympathicus the second and future spinal cord. This nervous sympathicus consists of two nerve strands, one to the left and one to the right of the spine. It emerges from a spot located above the medulla oblongata, a point where the two strings of the sympathicus and the direct sphere of influence of the pineales meet. The two strands of the sympathicus form two differentiated fields. One field to the right of the spinal marrow is creative. The second field to the left of the spinal marrow has a revealing function. The function of one field is stimulative, male. The function of the second field is reactive, female. The ancient Aryans therefore called the male field of the sympathicus pingala the female field of Ida. In the Book of Acts, the masculine field is denoted as Ananias, the feminine as Sapphira, which literally means the field of divine grace and the field of wonderful beauty. The radiation power of the revealing feminine field of the sympathicus successively exhibits every color of the spectrum, just as all kinds of sapphires do. The color of the ordinary human being is red. The color of the candidate on the fifth step is a wonderful amethyst violet. On the fifth step, the candidate is two sympathicus strands gradually grow together in a process of change. This union of the creative and the revealing elements becomes more and more profound. Thus, the male and the female anatomically become one and form a tri-unity once the old serpent fire of the ordinary spinal system has been extinguished unforcedly and naturally on the path of the endurer, and once the fire of renewal can also blaze in this system. The following development is revealed in the candidate of the fifth step. Once the radiations of Gnostic fire enter the heart sanctuary due to the action of the permanent atom, it is initially the hormone of the thymus gland that causes the projection in the head sanctuary. The thymus hormone is but a means of temporary assistance, as is the case in childhood, when it acts as storehouse for powers which are to serve a future independent growth. This storehouse is formed by the child's parents. The same thing happens in the pupil, whereby the storehouse is now formed by the vibration of the permanent atom in order to serve a possible new spiritual growth. Once the divine light has been ignited in the head sanctuary, we see a surge of power in the right strand of the sympathicus into the plexus sacralis at the base of the spine. The plexus sacralis is completely isolated from the ordinary serpent fire. The stream of grace of the gnosis now fills the entire being and descends the tower of mysteries to the earthly chamber of the plexus sacralis. There, Pingala is confronted with Ida. There, the stimulative field is connected to the revealing reacting field. Now the stream must ascend to the meeting place in the head sanctuary via this reactive field, Tsidai, e, the left strand of the sympathicus. Then the ascent through the Tower of Mysteries has been complete and the new process starts to take effect. The stimulating Gnostic power rushes downwards. The reactive sympathicus sends its reply, its sacrifice, its child of grace upwards. The ancient poet stated that this ascending stream is a stream of praise and gratitude, a jubilating gladness, a stream of renewal. No wonder the ancient philosophers called the sympathicus the lyre of God, the musical instrument played by the gnosis. If you can now imagine this effect, this circulation of the Gnostic revelation in the twofold sympathicus, and can see why those possessed of original knowledge called the plexus sacralis, the sanctifying plexus from which the power of Ida drives upwards, then you may also be able to a certain extent to imagine the consequences. The sympathicus, thus in the grip of the Gnostic power, develops into a new nervous system. A change of the body literally takes place. The new hydrogen ether reveals itself via this new nervous system, via this new system of lines of force. A new hormonal group is released in the blood, which reacts exclusively to the new nervous fluid. A new etheric blood fluid makes itself felt, and so we see, as it were, the miracle of the advent of a new personality within the old personality of nature and yet outside it. And this new personality is that of the coming new man. Whoever has started building this new temple, whoever has laid but the first stone, has become a man of mercy, a sanctified one, a brother or sister of the fifth step. But be cautious and on the alert, whoever stands, take heed lest he fall. It is therefore necessary that we inform you in detail as to the significance of the dramatic story of Ananias and Sapphira, as related in the Book of Acts. The miraculous field of the Sympathicus is the means enabling the city with the 12 gates of liberation to be built. May your city of Christianopolis soon reveal the foundations for its 12 gates. May the 12th gate soon shine from you in amethyst splendor.